Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your call. So keep it tuned here and we'll be right back.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
I'm doing really well. And yourself?
I'm great.
We've just had a fun time, huh?
We did.
Yeah, we were, for those of you who are listening and wondering what kind of fun we have when we're not talking, having the fun of talking to you out there around the world, we were at a board, Living Compassion board, conference, retreat, not conference, it was a, well, what was it? It was like a workshop for us.
Sure.
Where we do our annual planning, our best year yet planning, and we got to some really fun and exciting places.
Yes.
Then we're going to be telling people about those.
Yes.
Regularly.
Yes.
We don't have anything up on the web about it now, but we will before long. So
yes.
just lots of things that we're really enthusiastic about and that we are hoping to find resonance with other folks, people out there who also are excited about awareness practice and the work that we're doing in Africa and making peace a more moment-by-moment focus of conscious awareness in our lives and things like that. So on the 20th of every month, I don't know how many people listening get the emails that I send out, but I write about what we're doing and send it out to our whole Sangha. So if people would like to receive that, of course, they can go to the website and sign up and while they're there, they might sign up for our daily peace quotes and that sort of thing. So a lot of this will be coming out in that email and subsequent emails, and then we'll be talking more about it on the radio, and it'll be up on the website. So I hope people will stay tuned in every sense of that as we reveal the new directions for Living Compassion.
Yes. And the website, of course, is livingcompassion.org.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's exciting to me about what you're sharing is that I know for me personally there's that personal transformation that comes with practice, and I see evidence of that in my personal life.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get a whole bunch of people together who are also committed in that same way, really great things happen.
Great things happen. Yeah. And we had a little mini version of that, which for the last 3 days or so, which is it's great to participate. As you know, I'm doing an email class right now, and one of the themes that people write in about is how devoted the voices in the head, the conversation. The conditioned conversation in the head is to keeping people separate and isolated, so that you know we're off by ourselves with that voice, and since we are isolated in that way, the voices have immediate, undistracted access to us. And there's so much suffering in that conditioned relationship. And when we get connected with other people who are also practicing coming back to the present and living in conscious compassionate awareness, it's more difficult for those voices to have that kind of access to us. Our attention becomes divided, and the more we practice and enjoy practice, the more we're, you know, the way we talk about it, the more we're with Sangha and doing those kinds of activities together, the less access the voices have to us, and the happier we become. So that's, you know, that's the why of why do the voices work so hard to keep us from doing things that bring us back to ourselves? Why do they work so hard to keep us from meditating, to keep us from participating in a sitting group or signing up for a workshop or a retreat or take, you know, we're in the email class, we're encouraging people to watch the conversation in their head for these short periods of time. And somebody just wrote in and said, you know, I'm asked to sit and watch the conversation in my head for 7 minutes. But they're just, according to the voices, I don't have 7 minutes in the day that I could devote to that. My life is just so full and so busy that 7 minutes would just be an impossibility. And of course, when, you know, the person writes that down, they're writing it down in amazement. You know, it's like, no, I'm actually not that busy. You know, I waste 7 minutes regularly,
yeah.
Just, you know, wandering from room to room.
Yeah.
So it's not true at all. And yet, the voices are just so adamant about, no, you can't do that. You don't have time. You don't have money. People will find out who you are. You're just a phony and a fake and a fraud, and you're just going to go there and say stupid things, and people are going to think you're an idiot, and just outrageous things that people hear inside their head all the time, all aimed at, no, you cannot pay attention. No, you cannot practice awareness. No, you cannot wake up and end suffering. Can't. You got to be in relationship with me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool. Makes a lot of sense to me also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we experience it on a regular basis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So.
We have callers, Sherry.
That's wonderful.
I'd like to welcome Dawn from L.A. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Dawn.
Hi, Sherry.
Good evening. How are you?
Hi. I'm okay. I'm calling to get some guidance. I'm having some trouble disidentifying with a story.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to date, been dating a lot, and a lot of first dates. And I had a guy tell me a couple nights ago that I'm a nice girl, and we don't have any. He didn't feel any chemistry. And. On a side note, I didn't either. But of course, I've used this now as an excuse for a beating.
That's right.
Yeah. And
I don't want to go out with him again, but the fact that he doesn't want to go out with me is a killer.
Exactly. And it's pretty strong ammunition. And I guess the trouble that I have is I get that all intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes perfect sense, but I don't. I'm having trouble feeling it.
And so what happens? What are the... Do you get the information through voices? Is there a conversation about...
Yes, I'm making this mean something. I'm making this mean that I'm too old. I'm going to end up alone.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I don't have chemistry with anyone. That's a good one.
Yeah.
So I'm wrapping that into the fear of being alone. Here's another good one. Normal, sane guys don't like me. Only the crazy ones do.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So it does start a discussion in my head. And
yeah. And now this is the question that I always like to find out.
Are you having that conversation, or are you listening to that conversation?
I'm listening more than I'm having.
Yeah. So you're going along, and you start hearing a voice that wants to talk to you about what happened and about what this means.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to extrapolate. So this one guy didn't click with you, and what that means is you're completely unappealing, unlovable, you're going to be alone forever.
Right.
Unhappy. That's what this means.
And here's proof.
And here's proof. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
and it's. I mean, even talking to you helps because I totally get it intellectually.
Yeah.
I don't.
And so here's what I'm curious about. Does it feel like the voice just kind of wears you down, or does it feel more like the voice that starts in about this selects a particular part of you to talk to?
Oh, great question. I think it's selecting a weaker part of me to talk to. The part that cares if she gets married again or if she's lovable. I think that the person in me who's responding to this,
mm-hmm,
is the insecure, I'm not going to get married again.
And would you guess, now married again, of course this sounds like a funny
yeah,
question, but do you sense that she is actually young?
Yeah, probably.
Like, can you remember these sort of feelings from being a teenager?
Absolutely.
Yeah, wondering if you're going to get asked out to the whatever it is and who's going to ask you and what that means.
In fact, I never went to any of that. I never got asked to any of the prom or any, and that's all what kind of comes up again.
Mm-hmm.
And really feeling like an outsider looking in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm all alone, and everyone else is in a relationship or married, and...
And let's not talk about how many of them wish they weren't.
Well, exactly.
Yeah,
I was one of those.
This conversation is not about that. According
no. And that's what, I guess, the broader issue for me, no matter what the content is, I get all this intellectually. I've been to your workshops. I've called you. I've studied this stuff, and for 3 years now, and I don't feel it.
Well, yes, because I suspect the person who comes to the workshops, the person who does the work, is not this adolescent girl.
Right.
So there's a big gap between the grown woman who does the work, who understands it, who can see it, but who takes off and leaves a teenager to deal with perceived rejection.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So the grown woman knows, okay, yeah, that wasn't, you know, there weren't a lot of sparks there.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't feel it. I didn't feel it.
Yeah, not a match.
Not a match. Yeah, in fact, I wouldn't want to be in a relationship with somebody that I'm not well suited to be in relationship with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't have anything to do with that young girl who is making it all about her and what that says about who she is and what a failure she is and how inherently, intrinsically, she's lacking and undesirable.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So here's my best encouragement.
Okay.
Somebody needs to take care of her.
Okay.
And I bet because I have a feeling I'm talking to somebody older now, and that older person knows, is wise enough, has already been married, is wise enough to know that the odds are good that nobody is going to ever find anybody who is going to meet that basic need.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This two halves making one whole is, you know, it might sell cards at Valentine's Day, but the reality is the only relationships that work are when two whole people get together because they want to be together,
right?
Not because they're two halves of something who desperately need another half to make them feel whole.
Right.
Yeah.
And I get that. I do.
Yes, you do.
But not that little girl.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, she does not get that. She probably grew up on Cinderella and a lot of really bad music and
Barbie dolls and
slimy movies, and so she needs somebody older and wiser to mentor her.
Okay.
And especially to see that she is not left to deal with those voices.
Right. Okay. So when the voices start up, is that the time to mentor and step in?
That's right. So you, as the mentor, step in between those hateful voices and that young girl.
And stop the beating.
Stop the beating so that those hateful voices have to deal with a grown-up.
Okay.
And, you know, the grown-up realizes that what the voices are saying is silly.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's who needs to confront the voices. Or
do I need to, I hope this isn't coming from ego, do I need to let that little girl kind of cry, vent, do whatever, so that I'm not stuffing any of that down?
Sure. If she wants to.
Okay.
Adolescence is a stage, and we actually can grow through it. It's just most of us don't grow through it. We survive it, however badly.
Absolutely, right.
Yeah. And so for her to go through the feelings that she has and be mentored through those feelings, that's a wonderful thing. Now, if it turns into a bitter, angry, resentful, you know, this sort of thing, then we're no longer dealing with a young girl.
Okay. Then it's self-hate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then those voices are just doing a tag team thing. One of them talks and the other one listens, and they start going back and forth.
And stopping that is really to just disidentify.
Yeah, you just turn your attention back to the breath.
Back, yeah, okay. Okay.
All right.
That's been helpful.
Let us know.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Dawn.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Joining us, Dawn, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Diane from California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Sherry. I called at the very end of the show last week.
Yes, you did.
Call back. So I did.
Oh, good.
And I was calling, I was talking about decisions where I felt like either way I was going to make a mistake, and you started talking about that kind of regret and fear would go on as long as I was willing to believe I could make a mistake, and that I was believing that there were parallel universes and there's only one universe.
That's right.
And so I've worked with it more during the week, and I was rereading a little part of Making a Change for Good, and a lot of what you were just talking to the previous caller about subpersonalities feels like is going on for me, in that the particular decision I'm trying to make, it doesn't feel like it's so much about, I mean, there's fear on both ends, but it's like one part of me makes a decision and does all the footwork, and an enormous amount of footwork.
Yes.
And then right at the last minute, another part of me gets really anxious. And I don't know if you remember, but I was talking about I'm looking at trying to have a child on my own.
Yes.
And so one part does just research and experts and diet changes and this and this and this and this and this, and gets all the footwork done. And then this old anxiety, pattern comes up. And with it comes a voice of, I'll die if this comes up. And then, another part comes in and says, if you're this anxious, honey, you are in no shape to do this.
Yes.
And I get it that's when the mentor needs to come in and say, y'all shut up. And when I'm and I've worked with it a lot on a lot of decisions, and it's been really helpful. But this one is one that, you know, I can't seem to summon the mentor. And so what I keep doing is back, you know, getting right to the edge of, you know, the sperm bank and the whole shebang, and then I just, I have a week of losing sleep, and I just, and then I say, I can't, you know, and I, to some extent, I feel like that's responsible, you know, and to another extent, I want to work through this. And so I guess my question is, how do you strengthen the mentor when the other voices have even the mentor cowering?
Well, they actually don't have the mentor cowering, because they don't have that strength or that power. I would say that what's happening is that the person who is turning to the mentor doesn't have any faith in the mentor.
Uh huh.
So what you're saying is that this process, you've gone through any number of times.
Uh-huh.
It's just that with this particular piece of content, you get stuck at a place where with other decisions, you've been able to go through it.
Right.
So you would feel that anxiety.
Right.
But there was still a strong sense of, yes, but I want to do this.
Right. I ran a marathon a number of years ago, and I remember when I started, you know, I wanted to do it, and then a part of me was like, this is a ridiculous prospect or whatever, and I said, great, I'm going to take it on. Who cares about the marathon, but I'm going to take it on as a way to work with doubt. And for the first, you know, 2 weeks of the training, every morning I had the doubt, and I just said, hi, doubt, you know, I see you, and I ran the marathon. So I've worked with anxiety and fear a lot, and in this one, just like what you just said, in this one, I get stuck.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm guessing then what you're grappling with is this information from a deeper place,
right?
That in fact it's not something for you to do.
Uh huh.
And then the question is, how do you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's an old question I've asked myself a lot, too. Like, oh, is this, I kind of go, is it real or is it Memorex? You know, is this just conditioning or is this really wisdom? And I don't really think it's wisdom. I think it's fear and trauma.
Yeah. The thing that makes me suspicious that it's not wisdom is the level of anxiety.
Right.
Wisdom doesn't tend to be anxious.
Right. So I don't actually think it's wisdom. I get it that it's anxiety. And, you know, what I came to this week with it, you know, on my monthly foray was I need to be able to hear the mentor's voice before I embark, because I know that once I do embark, I'm going to really need to hear it, you know. So
what do you think the mentor would say to you in this situation?
That's a good question. What would the mentor say? It would say, okay, honey, we got to practice.
Mm-hmm.
Let
me lead the witness a little bit, okay?
Okay.
I would suspect that a wise, unconditionally loving, and compassionate mentor would say something along the lines of, you know, it doesn't really matter. I'm going to be with you regardless.
Uh-huh.
The only thing that matters is how you are with yourself.
Oh, yeah, I did actually hear that today. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because like today I was really, you know, right up against the decision and I went for a run, and it basically said something to the effect of, I'm going to find a way for you to live that's not so scary, which I guess is kind of close to it.
Uh-huh. Now, how did you then lose sight of that wisdom?
Well, I made the decision not to, you know, inseminate today, and to spend, you know, the next month just doing all that I could to strengthen my contact with a mentor.
Uh-huh.
And I talked with a friend and who's a parent, and she said, you know, I think that's sane, you know. And I guess then what happens towards the end of the day is I feel shame, you know, that I wasn't, that I couldn't buck up,
mm-hmm.
kind of. So
okay, so what if we all work on this together for the next month, and you start off kind of with what we talked about tonight and what you saw today.
Uh-huh.
So here's a person going along in life. You seem like a good person to me. And what would you want her to know about herself and about life?
And just sort of start filling that in? Or you're saying to do that right now or to work on that tonight?
Well, if anything comes to you right now, to put that out. You know, you could even think about your friend who is a parent. How old is this person's child or children?
Her daughter's 8.
Yeah. And does she ever get into, oh, my God, I'm ruining this child's life?
Yeah, she gets, you know, I think what it is, you know, all of my friends certainly have their issues, and it's not like I think I have to be perfect before
I parent.
No. I think it's that I get into sort of catastrophic anxiety attacks, and
yes,
that feels really untenable to me.
Right, but my point with the friend
uh-huh.
is that I would imagine what you would say to her is, it's going to be okay.
Uh-huh.
You're doing a fine job.
Uh-huh.
You know, you love that child.
Right.
That child knows it.
Right.
You know, there's never been a perfect parent.
Right.
You know, we all survived and we've grown from it. And was it perfect? No. But did you do the best you could? Yes.
Right.
So, isn't that kind of the
right? And as you say that, I realize. I think that there's some talking to my terrified child that needs to be done. Because I think I'm a teacher, and I think I know that I'll be a good parent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good with, I mean, I've had lots of that practice. I think there's I need to talk to the really scared part and say, I'm gonna take care of you still.
There you go. Because otherwise, what we can guess is happening is that really scared person goes, oh, my God. I'm going to be on my own here. Who's going to?
And it says, and you sure aren't taking care of me because look at you. You're totally anxious, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So everybody needs that mentoring.
Right.
Right? And so I think you're on a roll here to come up with those messages and to identify all of the folks who need to be reassured and comforted and protect. You know, it's practice. It's parenting practice.
Right.
Right? Because you're now going to do with the mother and all of the components of that mother
right.
what that mother is going to then practice doing with that child.
Thank you. That helped so much talking through that.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. And you'll let us know.
I will.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Diane. You are listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on Real Talk Radio. Sherry, I'm always just amazed with the sincerity and the willingness that I project onto all the callers.
Oh, it's, yeah. Yeah. And the thing that I am constantly stunned by is that such good people live in such torment. You know, I just want, I mean, my wish, I not really, because, you know, there must be some very good reason that we're in this boat that we're in. But for people to realize that these voices that want us to be afraid and anxious and feel bad they're just really talking to the wrong person. You know, maybe there are some people out there who really deserve this. I doubt it, but I don't know. But certainly the people that we are most in contact with, we just think, wow, you know, you really don't deserve that. It's not, this is not going anywhere, you know. We just need to, we often talk about it as karma nippers.
Yeah.
You know, people just need to get out those karma nippers and start doing the clip, 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 and and drop this stuff.
Right.
Yeah, because it's just uselessly, needlessly cruel and hurtful.
Yes, yes. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back.
All right.
Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller. I'd like to welcome Christine from California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey, good evening, Sherry. Good evening, Michael.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I think I'm good. I get this funny thing whenever I call in. I'm like, what's the problem? I don't have any problems. So I don't feel it right now, but I have a 10-year-old goldfish that I'm really attached to, and it looks like she's dying. And so I think I'm specifically calling for guidance around all the voices I've been getting around it, because what's been going on is I've actually had some she's been dying for about 4 days, and I've had some beautiful days in between, but then I all of a sudden get this panic, almost like in a dream where you realize you have a dog you haven't fed or something. I get this like, oh, I forgot to be really upset that the goldfish is dying.
Mm.
And then I get this big zing.
Mm-hmm.
And even as I'm saying it now. Yeah?
Yeah, what do you think about that?
Well, it goes with the belief if I just was more whatever, I could do something and save her life.
Uh-huh.
If I just was more attentive, cared more responsible, more willing to spend my time differently, more educated, more whatever, then I would know what to do, or I would figure out what.
So you don't seem to be able to control life and death, and that's all the proof that we need that there's something wrong with you.
I deserve to suffer, yeah.
You deserve to suffer. Yeah, because if you were the right person, you could control all aspects of life.
Including death.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe it, Sherry. I want to be able to stop her from dying, and I'm convinced it gives me this logic, which I buy, which is, well, she's not dying from old age, she's dying from a disease. So that equals it must be curable. You must be able to stop it.
Now, I mean, this is perhaps a silly or obvious question or something like that, but are there doctors for goldfish?
Yeah, actually, this is another line of reasoning I go down, which I think is just suffering. I have done a lot to try to help her. I think if I told anyone outside of myself what I've done, they would say, I'm going to cry. They would say, you did that for a goldfish? Like, wow. But I don't get that mercy inside. I get this all-or-nothing kind of, feels like a child, like, well, death is the worst possible thing that can happen, so you must stop everything you can to save the goldfish. Don't go to work, don't do this, like, because death is the ultimate, so that must mean something.
Mm-hmm.
And I have done a lot, and I'm very seduced and tempted to go over the list of what I've done to prove that I'm a good person.
Mm-hmm. And so you know that. You know that you have done everything a person really could do, and it sounds like way, way more than anybody else you know would ever consider doing.
Yeah.
And yet it's not enough to satisfy somebody.
Right.
And so what might that somebody actually want?
Well, now I just get intellect. Intellect says, well, it's ego. It's got to be ego. Cause
well, you know, you can say that that's intellectual, or, for instance, let's take it over here. So I have a dog, and I want the dog to do something. Mm-hmm. I want the dog to talk.
Okay.
And the dog won't.
Uh-huh.
And so I beat the dog.
Right.
And I keep beating the dog because the dog keeps refusing to talk.
Right.
Now, what do you think I really want? What do you think's really going on there?
I'm stumped. I just said to beat the dog. That could only be a person that secretly wants to beat a dog. I don't know.
Well, it's not very secret, is it? In other words, I set up an impossible circumstance.
Yeah.
And then I punish someone when they can't meet my impossible standard.
Right.
So is it really about the standard, or is it really about just finding a way to punish someone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I go for it when it does this, oh, yeah, we all know I'm trying to punish you. Yep, that's what I'm doing, because punishment's going to help you be motivated to save the fish's life. You know that one. Yeah, okay, well, yeah, ego's punishing me, right, uh-huh. Ego says, sure, you're right, you caught me.
Okay, let's go down another route here. Because, now, not that I don't think that is worth seeing and seeing for what it is,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So, there I am, I'm beating a dog, and somebody comes along and says, you know, dogs don't talk. That dog's never going to talk. You're just enjoying beating the dog. And I say, you caught me. Yeah, I just want to beat the dog. That is not a stopping point. I mean, a point in the process. That is the stopping point.
Seeing it is it.
There's nowhere to go from there.
Right.
Yeah.
You
caught me. I just want to beat you. Okay, then we don't need to talk anymore. You see? We don't say, and so now we'll continue in our relationship.
Right. All right, this is my... Right, okay.
Yeah.
Because there was a moment in here where, I don't feel it now, but I can again, where I started to feel like crying, and I got a voice that just said, you know, I'm really sorry that your goldfish is...
Yes.
I'm really sorry.
Absolutely. It's very, very sad. And we wish that it weren't happening, and we wish that it could be different,
mm-hmm.
and we wish that there was something to do, but in fact, you've done everything that a person can do, and it's just sad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's another way of looking at this that mm-hmm. you might also consider when it, you know, you hang up and it starts in on you again.
Right.
So here's a goldfish who's dying.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a woman who loves the goldfish.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a voice who is beating the woman for not saving the goldfish.
Mm-hmm.
How would we justify that?
Yeah, it just sounds disgusting.
Yeah.
And unnecessary.
Yeah. It's not intellectual. You just can't make an argument for it.
Right. Yeah, my ego it pins me a lot with, well, if you can't argue why this isn't true, then you got to go for it. So I get in.
You know, here's the deal. Here's the bottom line. You got to have to stop having conversations with those people.
That's it. Mm-hmm.
Because I think you can see in our conversation, if nowhere else, there's nothing for you in this. There is nothing good for you in that conversation. You don't need to have it.
Mm-hmm.
If I said to you, if you can't think of a good reason not to give me all your money, then you have to give me all your money.
Right.
I think you would say, go away.
I think I would. If I was, it just gets a little murky in there. But if it was clear, yeah. Yeah.
Well, if it's not clear, write me a check, okay? Yeah. I would encourage you that is the bottom line.
Right.
You just need to stop having these conversations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah. There's just no point in it. There's no purpose. It's not leading to anything that's going to help you or the goldfish. It's just mean and cruel and vicious and nasty, and you don't have to do it.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Christine. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Jacqueline from San Jose, California. You're on
Hello?
Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Ah, hi. Had difficulty getting through.
Aha.
I'm here.
And you're here now.
I've arrived. And, well, first of all, I want to preface that thank you very much for having me.
Oh.
For allowing me the space.
You're very welcome.
I hear some noise in the background. Well, yeah, I'll try to be brief and to the point. I'm coming here, I'm not so much with a problem as with a, I'm very much involved in this volunteer work for the Humane Society of the United States. I'm not even sure if it's appropriate, but we are circulating a petition to help end the suffering of factory farm animals.
Uh-huh.
Are you aware of that?
Am I aware of that?
Of the petition circling around the San Francisco Bay Area?
I am not.
Oh, it hasn't come to your attention yet.
No, I live a sheltered life far, far away from...
Oh, okay. Well, I spoke to someone in your office. He's very nice, a very courteous man, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
I sent an email, and in that email I've requested certain ways that maybe Living Compassion can help with the campaign to ease the suffering of factory farm animals.
Right.
And the email, I'm sure, will wind its way towards you in the next few days.
I wouldn't be at all surprised.
And as long as I'm talking to you, the idea I had in mind was at the Palo Alto Zen Center, maybe posting something on the bulletin board or...
You know what? We have stepped way beyond my my authority.
Oh, okay.
So we can certainly get that email around to everybody.
Okay.
And then just see where it goes from there.
Oh, all righty. Well, I don't want to go into it now. I don't want to use up space on the radio because there may be someone waiting.
Okay.
But I just wanted to bring attention to it, however briefly, or bring your awareness upon it so that can be looked into, because we only have less than 2 weeks left to gather signatures on this petition.
Wow. And very important work it is, and I'm very glad that you're doing it. I just read a statistic, and now it's gone completely out of my mind, but of the number of animals that were eaten just in the United States last year, and it's truly staggering. Best of luck. We will do whatever we can to assist.
Yeah, so you can't eliminate suffering completely, but at least you can alleviate some of it so that they can have something of a life.
Well, yeah, that's a...
However brief.
Yeah, that's another topic.
It's a whole other area, but I agree with your motto. Sherry, I just want to leave with this. Live simply so others may simply live.
Mahatma Gandhi.
Right, and that applies to all species everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely so.
So you'll read it in my email, and thank you. Namaste.
Good night.
Gosho.
All right.
Bye-bye.
That's Jacqueline. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, I have an email question here.
All right. Hey, Michael, before you do that,
I
mentioned early on in the show that we're having some big changes that are coming up in the next little while.
Yes.
One of them will involve radio access with people, and so I want to encourage everybody who participates in the radio show to, again, keep an eye on our website and maybe get an email communication with us. So that we can keep people informed about the changes that are coming up.
Yes. And Sherry, would you say that if people are already on our regular mailing list, that's good enough?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and if they're not, they can send an email to openair@livingcompassion.org.
Yes, they can.
That sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, here's the email question.
All right.
Gasho, I need some guidance as to how to break a long-standing self-battering cycle that always leads to an explosion on my part that offends or hurts someone else. The result is that I feel shame, guilt, and immense self-hate. The cycle starts when something happens and my conditioning to take it personally kicks in. I start feeling judged and rejected, and the anger starts building. Conditioning then finds all kinds of things for me to take personally and become upset about. Today, I blew up at someone on the staff of my union, used the F word at this person, and almost got kicked out of the office by the man in charge. I was told to apologize or leave, this greatly adding to my self-hate. I saw that I had genuinely hurt this person, so I apologized. The person then explained what she meant by the remark that had disturbed me. I had completely misinterpreted it, and so self-hate started beating me up over that. I've been locked in this cycle for many decades. I see I am unable to stop it. I can see conditioning, taking things personally, but by the time I see it, I'm at a point where I can't disidentify from it. I've been to There's Nothing Wrong With You retreats, and I'm coming to the Graduates Retreat in February. I'm taking the email class. I'm determined to do everything to break this cycle. Between now and the email class, is there something I can do to prevent another explosion? I work nights and am unable most of the time to call into your show, but I listen to the archives regularly. Thank you from a listener.
Well, of course, the determination is the key piece of this. The first point is conditioning doesn't take things personally. Conditioning, that kind of process that this person is describing, that's a karmic setup to result in suffering.
Uh-huh.
It's the cause. What's given as a cause is just a scam. It's just a ruse to get the person involved in that whole drama. So, because of course the karma is I wind up in this place. Okay, I do this thing. I'm out of control. I hurt and offend people. I'm wrong. And then I have to feel bad. That's a great karmic package. And so there are so many places to catch on to this. The first one is with the conversation, and that is that if this has been going on for decades, then I can't imagine this person doesn't have a pretty clear view, a pretty good idea about how the conversation starts. Okay, and so the case is being built. You know, it probably includes things like, I can't believe, why did it, who did it, hey, blah, 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 this kind of thing.
Yeah.
As the person is being worked up into a state. And so, of course, that's a good time to stop. That would be a good time to do all kinds of things. The primary one being to realize that what I need to do is end this conversation. So So then what happens is the person has a bunch of adrenaline racing around through their body. So they're, you know, all worked up on a physical sensation level. Well, that's a good time to go for a brisk walk or to, you know, go out in the backyard and dig a very deep hole and then fill it in or something moves that energy through the body.
Yeah.
Because the conversation builds the energy in the body. The energy in the body fuels the conversation. Okay, so then there's the element of what this means. Okay, the only reason to take something personally at that level is because it means all of this stuff. And what it means is everything the voices say about me, about the world, about them, about how it is, about the past, about the future is really true. And this is the proof. Okay, so it's very helpful. You know, in this situation, the person acts out in this really big, it sounds like nasty sort of way, and was wrong. Yeah?
Yeah.
As it turns out, the person didn't even mean what the interpretation was.
Yeah.
So how many times do we need to have that experience before it would occur to us that I might have misunderstood?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
So there are lots of ways to interrupt this. But the thing that that's required is a willingness to do that.
Uh-huh.
That's the hard part for almost everybody.
Yes.
Once it gets started, am I willing to pull the plug on it? Am I willing to just turn my attention somewhere else and let it go? Or do I need to be right and follow this through to this same conclusion one more time?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense what you're saying.
Yeah, it's such an exciting process. And, my wish for the person is that what they would focus on is not stopping it, but really seeing how it works, breaking it down the way we just did, and watching it in a way that begins to dissolve the karma, rather than focusing on, I want to be a different person, so that I get a different result, because that's the thing that's holding it in place. That's not the thing that's going to end it.
Yeah. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael.
We're at the end of our hour.
Talk to you soon.
Good night.
Good night.